This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. How about we grab a round of drinks at the bar? Doesn't that sound nice? By the way, you can even leave your mask behind, because where we're going, they won't let you in if you haven't been fully vaccinated.
It feels like this little secret that nobody else knew, and like almost like a speakeasy, a hidden speakeasy. And even when you're outside, you hardly know the place is open, which is so great because keep the riffraff away.
Welcome to Risky Business, LA's private club for vaccinated members. Andy Cantos was just one of the dozens of patrons who were at the North Hollywood Bar last weekend. Want to be part of the club? All you need is $10 and your vaccine card. Risky Business is part of a trend you're going to be seeing a lot more of. Venues that require vaccinations in order to walk through their doors. Now, a few weeks ago, there was a concert at SoFi Stadium that was only open to vaccinated frontline workers. Dodger Stadium has a section for fully vaccinated people. Doesn't require masks or social distancing. This summer, the Hollywood Bowl plans to do the same. KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo was at Risky Business when officially it swung its doors open for club members on Saturday, the first Saturday night it's been open in over a year. And she has this report straight from the bar stool.
Hands down, Saturday night had to be one of the most surreal nights in recent pandemic memory. As I whizzed through traffic in my Uber, my hands felt clammy and my heart raced. Just the idea of drinking in a bar with strangers and no mask, I mean, really? But as soon as I walked into that lively bar, listener, I'm going to be honest with you. It's like that pandemic meme, nature is healing.
It feels good. It feels free, unrestricted. It's like, feels pre-COVID, almost like a different time, right?
I love it. You can drink some cheap beer, sit in a wobbly seat like it's 2019. It's fantastic. You can't
Very
beat it.
I watch partygoers slam back tequila shots, strangers hugging, and folks sitting elbow to elbow right at the rectangular bar. The speakers above bumped music as groups of friends played pool in the back. Some folks who saw my mic got right up in my face to chat, maskless.
This place is fantastic. The vibe, the energy, the people around. It just feels so good to be back. It feels so good to be back in life. I mean, we're all walking around without our masks on because every single one of us are healthy and vaccinated, and we can have life back. It's good.
This is one of Andy Cantos' first nights back on the town since last March. He has type 1 diabetes, his business partner has type 2 diabetes, and really, he's only ever went out for socially distanced walks or pandemic-safe hangs with this tiny COVID bubble. He says he's missed being close to others and those deep heart-to-heart talks with strangers.
The feeling I had when I shook the first person's hand, being able to touch somebody again, just palm to palm, just that little bit of, like, you know, time that I got to share with somebody in that simple way was just joy. Remember, like, the joy you felt when you were a kid? Maybe it was your birthday, or maybe it was like when you spent time with a friend. That's what it feels like here today. We are all friends together.
After reading about the bar online, Cristana Melendez says she immediately signed up to join. She says it's a great post-vaccine perk.
I think the membership fee is worth the peace of mind coming here and knowing that there's like-minded people who have done everything that they're supposed to do in the past year. They've social distanced, they've worn the mask, they've gotten the test. I'm not worried about, like, oh, this has, like, a wearing his mask as a chin strap instead of wearing it as a mask.
It's that desire for a space that's as safe as humanly possible that co-owners Ari Schindler and Jonathan Katz were going for when reopening the bar formerly known as The Other Door, as this club called Risky Business.
The name is not accidental. We call it Risky Business for a reason, and it's not that we accidentally said the quiet part loud or something like that. This is about people who want to manage their risk, period, right? And it's an environment where we feel that there's a large group within the population that wants this way of managing their risk.
The idea for the vax-only space came from frontline worker friends who've seen the worst of the worst throughout the pandemic.
It's a horror show for them in the hospital with, no rooms available and people on ventilators and so on. And they came to us and they basically just said, when is there going to be some place where we can go to blow off steam? When is there?
So how do you join the exclusive club? It's as quick as paying a one-time $10 membership fee, filling out some paperwork, and coming by for an ID and vaccination check. But there's a catch. All prospective members must sign an agreement saying you can be sued for $10,000 if you're lying about your vaccination status. I checked in on the viability of those legal threats with Thomas A. Lentz, a partner at the Atkinson Andelson Law Firm in Pasadena and an advisor to businesses on handling COVID-19 risks. He says the threats, and even the bar itself, operate in a legal gray area.
We're in the middle of a developing situation, and I think a lot of business people are trying to adapt. They may be changing their business model, or at least what they call their business model. It's not at all unusual for government to take a different view of the situation. I wouldn't be surprised to see the county or perhaps some other regulator take interest in this situation.
In other words, is this legal? Well, maybe. But co-owner Ari Schindler says there's no explicit rule banning private clubs for the vax amid the pandemic. The bar hasn't gone without its detractors, of course. Some on social media call the bar irresponsible or even deem them discriminatory. Here's John on the matter.
It's funny, and you probably don't want to talk about this, but I mean, the number of times we've been called Nazis just because, we're demanding people's paperwork. But at the same time, we do have that almost libertarian perspective of this is the risk profile that we can provide you. Make decisions that are, comfortable to you.
Ari says others were turned off by the membership aspect of the club.
It's just funny that people, hear that it's private and see that we have very well-designed membership cards that John engraves and think that it must be some kind of elitist thing when it's exactly the opposite.
The point, says the co-owners, is not to be exclusive. It's a place where anyone who's vaccinated can run free.
This is a bar like before pandemic or like after pandemic. And there are no rules. There are no rules related to masks. There are no rules related to distancing. There is none of that. This is a normal place. And it's made normal by the fact that there is 100% vaccination. It's really that simple.
It's unclear whether other bars will follow in the footsteps of Risky Business, but in the meantime, let that champagne flow. For KCRW, I'm Danielle Chiriguayo.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Requiring a vax to get into a bar or a section of seats of a Hollywood Bowl is one thing, but what about requiring a vaccine to keep your job? Well, now that the vax is widely available, some companies have found that it's no longer good enough to encourage employees to get shots to reach herd immunity. We're starting to see some say you have to get a COVID-19 vaccine to stay employed. Not exactly a popular idea with those who are more hesitant to get that shot. So is it good business? Is it even legal? With me now to talk about it is KCRW's Kaylee Wells. She's been covering the vaccine rollout since the early days, and she joins me right now. Hey, Kaylee.
Hey, Steve.
How popular is this idea, by the way, to require an employee to get a shot?
Well, I actually started asking about it a few months ago, and it's really only started to become relevant. I mean, the vaccine only became widely available a few weeks ago. So if it's a trend, we're kind of at the beginning of it. At the moment, you're just seeing sort of a brave few announcing that they'll do it. And it's kind of in sectors that you would expect, healthcare, education. I did speak with a long-term care facility who started requiring it a couple months back. I spoke with people working at Cal State campuses. They're going to require it as soon as the FDA switches from emergency to full vaccine approval. So gaining popularity, I would say.
Have they sought full approval yet? They're going to, right?
They're going to. We're still in the process of those long-term trials. You can't really seek full vaccine approval until those have been proven to be safe. So we're not at that stage yet. Right now, we're just in what's called emergency use authorization.
That could be a little while, right, before we get full vaccine approval.
Yes, long-term trials usually take a couple years, so we have a little ways to go.
So you found a local company who's already requiring vaccination, though, right? I mean, how's that going?
Apparently pretty well. So this company is called Silverado. They're a long-term care facility chain across the nation, but most of their locations are actually here in Southern California. And as you remember, long-term care facilities were really high stakes a little while ago. There was a lot of death happening there. So founder Lauren Shook said their number one priority was to keep the residents safe, and they didn't feel they could do that by just waiting and hoping employees get their vaccine.
Coming from fear is go to the decision where we keep them safe and every other, we've done all we can do, it's their choice. And I think that's the wrong decision. This vaccine is available, it's amazingly effective. And we made the decision that, you know, this vaccine is a gift to us, it's up to us to have the courage to use it.
And that actually worked for them. So you know how we usually shoot for between 70 and 90% is the magic number for herd immunity?
Yeah.
So they actually started mandating the shot back on March 1st. Their vaccination rate is now 97%.
Wow, 97%. I mean, that's great. Are they allowed to do that? I mean, are they going to get sued? Does someone say, hey, I'm an employee, but I have a problem with getting vaccinated, a religious exemption or something like that?
Well, I mean, it's always possible. There's no lawsuits yet, but even if it is legal, there's nothing stopping somebody from trying to make that argument. The good news for Silverado, though, is there is precedent. So in 1905, there were actually some states that required smallpox vaccines, and the Supreme Court said, A-okay, you're okay to do that. An employment lawyer that I spoke with, her name is Ramit Mizrahi, and she said that that puts employers in a pretty good position to mandate a vaccine.
In the workplace, if there is some sort of virus or pandemic or some other such thing that creates a direct threat to the health and safety of others in the workplace, the employers can try to manage that. And if there's a vaccine available that can mitigate that risk, employers are allowed to mandate that. Now, when they do that, they do need to look at whether doing that might have an impact on people with disabilities. And if so, they have to see whether there's a potential reasonable accommodation for those individuals that would allow them to keep working without the vaccination.
And by the way, when she says a reasonable accommodation, that means maybe you've been working at home and you can keep doing that. But, you know, if you're an associate at Silverado, for example, and you're interacting with residents every day, there's a good argument to be made that there is no reasonable accommodation that Silverado could provide.
All right, but there has to be, Kaylee, some exceptions to this. I mean, there always are exceptions. What are they?
Well, there are. There's a few. So maybe you have a medical condition, and there are very few people who can actually get a severe allergic reaction to vaccine ingredients. So that would be one of them. Or maybe you're pregnant. The CDC hasn't officially confirmed if they're 100% safe yet for pregnant women. And then, of course, there's the religious exemption. And you've heard this before. It's the idea that my fundamentally held belief doesn't allow me to participate. But with the COVID-19 vaccine, there's actually no major religions that oppose it. And Mizrahi says that that's good news for employers.
If a person makes a religious objection, an employer should ordinarily assume that it's based on a sincerely held religious belief. But if the employer has an objective basis to question the sincerity of that particular belief, they can ask the person to identify what they're relying on, the basis for their religious objection, and how their religious belief is negatively affected by the vaccine.
So Kaylee, how did all this play out at Silverado?
Well, the founder, Lauren Shook, who we heard from, said employees with these skills are really hard to find. And so their biggest concern was a really mass exodus in their workforce. But it turned out that didn't really happen. They have well over 1,000 employees, and it turned out 11 people, which is less than 1% of them, ended up quitting. So went pretty well. But Mizrahi says it does get more complicated if you're dealing with employees that are protected by labor unions.
All right, let's talk about labor unions then, because we're talking about healthcare workers, people in education, those type of folks are unionized. How has that changed the game?
Well, it really depends union to union. So I spoke to a local chapter of a nurses union, and they told me they do support vaccines, but they don't support mandating them. And then there's the CSU union that represents some of the employees working at the Cal State campuses. They are neutral on the concept. So Catherine Hutchinson, I spoke with her. She's the president of CSU EU, and she says they're just not happy with how the school handled the announcement.
It caused panic. It really did. I mean, people were afraid that they were going to lose their jobs if they didn't have some sort of proof of vaccination or things like that. That if this is the way they were leaning, they should have come to all the unions and said, this is what we're thinking about. This is where we're going. And we could have gotten these questions out to them, because people feel like it's like you're almost behind the times in the sense of now we have to play catch up to get to where the CSU is at. And if they just come to us in the beginning and worked with us, then I think we'd be in a different position on how people feel about the mandate.
So obviously, when you add in a union, you get a little bit more of a conversation between the laborers and the employers. That means more negotiations. And in the case of CSU, there are demands by employees about privacy, certain medical and religious exemptions, and things like that. So CSU might have to compromise on some of that. It doesn't mean they can't mandate it. It just means that there's going to be one more hoop to jump through before they do it.
KCRW's Kaylee Wells reporting on vaccines at work. Kaylee, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up, a vaccine card is one thing. A phony one is something altogether different and illegal, by the way. But how to fight that? Just ahead on Greater LA. First, I want to remind you about KCRW's Drive to the Future, where your support goes beyond public radio. You know, over the past year, you have heard us report on the people and places most affected by the pandemic, the testing that took place at the beginning, lots of testing, still testing, by the way, the hospitals that became ground zero in the fight, the hard-hit communities of low and modest income. Today, of course, vaccinations you're hearing about. Well, during this pledge drive, a portion of your contribution supports KCRW's community partners as well. We're focusing during this drive on housing, public health, and education, giving a portion of our proceeds and the attention, by the way, on the radio to those causes. This week, we're focused on the important work that Kedron Community Health Center is doing in South Los Angeles. So support KCRW today, and a part of your contribution will help Kedron provide the community with mental and primary health care. KCRW.com/give. And wherever you are in Greater LA, know that you are an important part of our mission to inform, to help drive the conversation, to educate, to stimulate. KCRW.com/give. Together we can build a better future. And thank you for your support of KCRW. From bars to mandates to scams, because with the rise of vaccinations comes the rise in fakes, fake cards, prop cards, stolen cards. The illegal market of vaccine cards is here. Just last week, in a town about 40 miles southeast of Sacramento, law enforcement arrested a bar owner for selling fake vax cards. Todd Anderson's being charged with identity theft, falsifying medical records, forging government documents. He has an arraignment next week. But it is a novel case, and California authorities tried to find guidance from similar cases across the country. They couldn't. And here to tell us more about this fraud and how common this occurrence may become is Shira Frankel. She covers cybersecurity for the New York Times. Shira, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start with this case. This guy, Todd Anderson, arrested after, I guess it was a months-long investigation. You know, these vaccination cards have been out since December. Do you get a sense that local officials maybe saw this scam coming?
You know, it's interesting. I think in some states, in some cities, local officials were on top of it. And in December, January, immediately began cracking down. But in lots of other places, we're seeing these kind of scams run wild. And unfortunately, because the internet is not state-specific or city-specific, it doesn't really matter if a particular state cracks down on it. If there are people in other parts of the country who are selling these cards online, those who want to run these scams, those who want to participate in these scams, are going to find a way to buy fake vaccine cards.
And by the way, these, you know, without having a vaccine passport per se, right? I mean, these cards are pretty much it.
Exactly. And as we know, they're very, very low tech. We're talking about a very simple white and black 3x5 card that anyone can print off the internet and forge for themselves. Now, the CDC made these cards simple for a reason. They were rushing to get the vaccines out. It was, you know, sprint to the finish line. That being said, what they're now seeing is that these are really easy to forge. People are very interested in forging them for a number of different reasons. And correcting this, finding a way to somehow authenticate people who have gotten the vaccine and those who haven't is going to be difficult.
You just said this is so easy, obviously, to emulate, to copy these cards, to make forgeries of. But how do you prove it?
Well, I mean, right now you can unfortunately go to a number of different online stores, and I'm not going to list them because I don't want to make it too easy for people, but you can go to a number of different online stores and buy these for, you know, $5, $10, $15, depending on how good the forgery is, or you can download instructions off the internet on how to make it yourself. And because there's such a sort of virulent anti-vaccine group here in the United States, a movement who really believes that vaccines shouldn't be forced on people, they're providing instructions for people on how to print these cards for themselves. And so again, we're seeing while some law enforcement agencies are being really aggressive and trying to combat this and trying to take down local scams, because there's so many of them spread across the internet, it's going to be a real battle for them to effectively remove all the different scammers.
So the anti-vaxxers are kind of like, you know, sticking it to the man, right? I mean, we're not going to get vaccinated. And you know what? We're going to prove that we are vaccinated.
Right. I mean, when I reported the story for the New York Times, within 24 hours, I was able to speak to three different people who were selling these fake vaccine cards online. And all three of the sellers told me a very similar story, which is, why should anyone force us to get the vaccine? If we don't want to get it, we shouldn't have to get it. And we want to try and help other people who are not interested in getting vaccinated skirt authorities as well.
And by saying skirt authorities, you mean like, in order to sit in a particular section at a, say, a baseball stadium, or to go to a concert or something like that where it's vaccinated only, you have your card.
Well, one of them told me something which I found even more concerning, which is that she sold fake vaccination cards to a person who was a healthcare professional, who in order to do her job in a medical establishment had to be vaccinated, did not want to get vaccinated. And so this person was potentially putting other people's lives at risk, people who were immunocompromised and could not get vaccinated yet. And she was using the fake vaccine card to give to her employers as a way of faking getting the vaccine herself.
What's the remedy in this, Shira? I mean, if there, you know, if there are all these phony cards out there, I mean, how do you fix that?
Well, one thing that the states are considering right now is if they do roll out vaccine passports or some kind of digital authorization that shows that you got the vaccine, they're not going to rely on those little white CDC cards as proof. What they're going to do is ask pharmacies in your state or mass vaccination sites in your state to give them the evidence that you got vaccinated. And all that's going to happen digitally. It's going to happen through the government. So they're basically going to take on verifying for themselves who got vaccinated and who didn't.
I want to go back to this case up north. This is uncharted territory, right? Do you think that it's going to be a hard case to prove? Will it hold up in court?
I think it will be an important precedent-making case if they are able to prosecute, because it will, I hope at least, encourage other people who are interested in selling fake cards online to not do so if they see there are real ramifications and that authorities will pursue them successfully.
I mean, when you say real ramifications, we're talking about people who are not vaccinated, who are saying they are vaccinated, mixing and mingling. I mean, that's a public health hazard as well.
Exactly. And actually, it was that is the main use of these fake vaccine cards. Although one thing that surprised me when I did this story earlier this month was that some people were actually buying fake vaccine cards because they wanted to get to the front of the line and get vaccinated. They could buy a fake vaccine card, claim they already had one shot, and then say they needed their second shot immediately. Now, of course, that's less of a problem because a lot of pharmacies, especially here in California, have same-day openings and walk-in clinics. But as we start to see younger people getting vaccinated, we think this week we're going to see 12 to 15-year-olds be able to get vaccinated. There could be another rush of parents who are eager to get their kids vaccinated and want to get their kids to the front of the line. And this could be a way of tricking the system and getting their kids in for a shot immediately.
Shira Frankel, she covers cybersecurity for the New York Times. Shira, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, 12 to 15-year-olds are approved to get vaccines. How's that going to work in California? And what's been the response so far? That's tomorrow. on another episode of Greater LA. A reminder that KCRW's Drive to the Future goes on, asking for your support of the station that helps support you. News, culture, music, every day at kcrw.com/give. That's kcrw.com/give or 800-600-5279. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, Evan George, PJ Shahamet, Mike Stark, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Jody Adler, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.